This is Coast to Coast AM, and this is Whitley Strieber sitting in for vacationing George Noory. Fasten your seatbelts for big-time late-night wonder as we journey through the mysteries of space and time tonight. It's going to be a very exciting show. We're going to start off with an amazing man, Ralph Steiner, who knows more about the paranormal than you are going to believe. You've probably never heard of him before. He was a broadcaster for many, many years, and his awesome knowledge is going to really, really take us places we have never been before. Then later, the great Graham Hancock is joining us. We're going to be talking about the mysteries of the deep past. What happened to make our world the way it is today? Was there a great catastrophe in the distant past so huge that we are literally in amnesia about it? Well, we'll find out. Graham's got a lot of incredible ideas. He's one of the great minds of our time, and we're excited to have him back on Coast to Coast AM. It's an interesting day today in my life because this is the second day, the anniversary of the second day after my close encounter experience in December of 1985. It happened on December the 26th, 1985. December the 27th, I was just beginning to understand the incredible thing that had happened to me. And Ann Strieber's written a wonderful new diary about it on unknowncountry.com. She's here with us tonight, too. She'll be joining us over the course of the show. I've also got a journal entry about it, thinking and reminiscing a little bit about what happened on that amazing night all those years ago. Interestingly enough, 31 years ago today was the third night of the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident, arguably the most important UFO incident ever after Roswell, that happened in England in 1980. And there's on Unknown Country, there is an audio tape from YouTube on the Out There section. On that night, Colonel Walter Haught was actually making a tape of events as they took place, which you can now listen to, and it's absolutely fascinating. It's also worth noting, for those of you who have heard all the frantic debunking of the Rendlesham Forest incident, that the Ministry of Defense, British Ministry of Defense, said last year that all records of that incident had disappeared. They could not find them. They were releasing all of their old UFO information, and some of it was quite startling, but this was too much to risk, and they did not do it. It's been a very interesting week in the world of UFOs, for that matter, which we follow. I follow, of course, very carefully. Over a Chinese city on Christmas Day, in fact, on December the 25th, there was quite an interesting UFO incident. It starts out as an orange blinking light. Then a dark object appears as it appears to draw closer to the camera. Then there's a moving star in the upper part of the frame, indicating some kind of operational activity. And you can see that also on the unknowncountry.com Out There section. We have, Ralph Steiner, we're going to be talking to Graham Hancock, as I said a few moments ago, and we have some really interesting, really new stuff to talk about, and I think you're going to find it absolutely fascinating. When we get back, we're going to be talking with the amazing Ralph Steiner. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM. This is Coast to Coast AM. Whitley Strieber sitting in for George Noory. I'm back. We've got Ralph Steiner with us tonight. Ralph Steiner is a longtime broadcaster on KPFA in San Francisco. He was one of the first people to really do an in-depth interview of Whitley Strieber about communion, and I think he probably knows more about UFOs, the paranormal, and such subjects than as much as anyone in this world. An amazing man, and I'm very pleased to have him with us. I'm going to start out, Ralph, with a quote that you sent me by email, and I'm quoting now Ben Rich, the head of the Skunk Works, Lockheed Skunk Works, which of course everyone knows. He said this shortly before his death. We have the means today to travel among the stars, but it is bottled up in black projects. It will take an act of God to pry it loose. Hello, Ralph. How are you?
Hi, Whitley. How are you doing this
evening? Oh, it's wonderful to hear your voice. Now, could you tell me a little bit more about what Ben Rich was saying? It sounds almost like he was saying that it would take some kind of supernatural force to get this door opened for us.
Well, what Rich was referring to is that for many years, the compartmented world of classified research and development had been exploring back-engineered alien technology. This dates back to Roswell and possibly earlier, but at least in July of 1947, the allegations with a lot of testimonial evidence behind it and some physical evidence now that a spacecraft of some kind was actually recovered from the New Mexico desert sort of started a new chapter in human history. And all of that occurred parallel to the development of the atomic age, where the effort to build the first nuclear weapons was shrouded in secrecy. So we had this infrastructure set up where money was allocated, and exactly what was done with it was not known, never disclosed until the project matured a few years later, 3 years after it began. And after World War II, that secret infrastructure morphed into our familiar military-industrial complex, where you had defense contractors, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, General Dynamics, Raytheon, these very familiar names that built some of the most sophisticated aerospace technology for our government. But most of that building and designing was done in complete secrecy and through compartmentalization, so that people really didn't know that these things were occurring in the United States. And what Ben Rich was alluding to is that in the course of examining and back engineering, taking apart and reassembling and figuring out the physics behind alleged alien technology, that we had acquired the basic physics to build, in essence, an interstellar drive system that would enable us to jump across the galaxy and to possibly leave our solar system.
Ralph, are we doing that?
Some would say that there is reason to believe that we might be doing that in concert with other civilizations. Some would say that we've been able to jump from the moon to Mars, and that we've set up bases on both of those bodies within our own solar system. It's hard to pin these things down because if such programs exist, they're so heavily compartmentalized that you cannot verify the allegations. And so as a researcher who looks into these things in a relatively parsimonious way, it's very, very difficult to nail it down. So you're oftentimes reliant upon the testimony of people and the credibility of the people and their background that gives the testimony the weight.
You know, folks, and let me just stop for a moment to say this, there's going to be a live chat with Andrew Basiago, attorney Andrew Basiago, on Coast Insiders Wednesday the 28th at 8 p.m., He says he was part of DARPA's Project Pegasus and was one of America's early time-space explorers. In this exclusive session, you can question him about his experiences with time travel and teleportation and so forth, and Mars, for example. So that should be interesting. And it seems to me that I've seen more and more things kind of floating to the surface lately, Ralph, about Mars and are having a much deeper relationship with Mars than we think, that there may be more going on there than we've realized. Is there anything that you can point to specifically that would suggest that may be true or not?
Well, one of the things that piqued my curiosity in the 1980s, and this is sort of circumstantial, is that when Carl Sagan published his very inspiring glossy book, Cosmos, there were some pictures taken from Mars orbit, alleged to be taken by the parent orbiter, the Viking orbiter, that were so crystal clear that it appeared to have been taken on high-format film rather than the grainy video that had been transmitted by the lander, the Viking landers that had actually made it to the surface. And there was such a disparity in resolution between the orbital photos the color, the resolution compared to the television footage that was released, that was sent back from the lander, that I began to question whether or not there might have been some more sophisticated equipment sent to Mars in a way that we didn't know about. And in the years that have passed, I've actually been subjected to some testimony, highly questionable, but nevertheless significantly provocative, to suggest that we might actually have been there in alien spacecraft. I cannot verify that. All I can do at this point is to say that the subject requires further investigation, and hopefully some whistleblowers with inside credentials who are credible may come forward and leak something of this nature.
You know, there's one thing that absolutely struck me. I never will forget it. It's an image of from one of the Mars rovers of a cliffside and then a long valley beyond it. And in the process of what appears to be jumping off of a rock is a human figure. It's totally black, as it would be if someone was actually wearing a sophisticated suit on Mars, not a space suit, but a suit that was designed to absorb every bit of heat and light possible to keep the individual warm. Black would be the color of choice. And it was immediately debunked on various websites as being just a trick of the camera, an optical illusion. And it was explained that it was if you put on 3D glasses, it was a stereo picture, and also shown as a single image picture. You would see immediately that it was just a rock. So I got a hold of the stereo image and a pair of the glasses, and it was not hard to do. I put them on, and it looked even more like a figure.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was dropped. It just went away.
Yeah, yeah.
You know that image, I'm sure.
Right, I'm very familiar with it. In fact, Andy Bishago and I collaborated for a number of years, and Andy was the first one to call my attention to that, and I've gotten some very clear images of that frame.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting chat, folks, by the way. And I was glad that when I got that email today that Andy was going to be on the show, I thought, I know that he and Ralph collaborated for a while, so we'll be talking a little bit about Mars. Tell us what you think of that image.
Well, it's an anomaly. What's interesting is that if it's an actual object that appears to be what it looks like, there's nothing else around it that stands out.
Nothing like it at all.
Yeah.
Looks like a guy jumping out of the way.
Right. If there was something like that on the surface of the planet, one would expect there would be other ones clearly obvious in its proximity, and there would be some sort of infrastructure to indicate that there were artificial structures on that plane. And you don't see that. So I don't know what that is, but it's very provocative. And this is something that dares the imagination to jump, but also you have to use your logical mind and think clearly when you see an anomaly like that. The question is, could it have been planted there as a Photoshop job by counterintelligence agencies? Why would they do that? Well, to stimulate discussion about something that's not real and to focus attention away from other things. There are all kinds of psychosocial reasons why intelligence agencies might want to do something like that. But I'm not saying that's what it is. I think that at least we should question it. We should inquire of NASA as to what this is and continue to probe and analyze the photo and look to see if we can see something like it elsewhere on the surface of Mars in other photos.
Well, Coast Insiders, definitely tomorrow night, ask Andy about this and see what he thinks as well, because I think it's an absolutely fascinating, one of the most fascinating pictures around. And who knows what it may mean. Now, Ralph, let's move on now, and I want to go into things that are happening a little bit closer to home, because it's been a quite frankly incredible year in physics, and it's so incredible that the whole way we think about the world is changing, and not only that, but the implications are startling in terms of speed of light and movement through time and things like that. So let's talk about a little bit about the developments at CERN particle accelerator in Switzerland.
Okay. Very, very important work. You have the Large Hadron Collider beginning to amass data to suggest that the Higgs boson, the long sought after so-called God particle, might actually have turned up. And it's going to take a lot of analysis to parse through tens of thousands of collisions over the past few months where protons are slammed into protons at 99.99999.1% of the speed of light.
Right.
Within a particular energy and mass range to see whether or not there is a signature for the Higgs boson. But the most important thing that this particular super microscope is contributing is our understanding of what the conditions of our universe was like just a few microseconds after the Big Bang event began nearly 14 billion years ago. So whether or not they find the Higgs boson, the fact is we're able to explore this particular energy range and heat range to where we can break the symmetries down of subatomic particles to where they were microseconds after the initial event that birthed our universe, and see backwards in time as to the conditions that originated all of us. And I think that's the most important contribution of the Large Hadron Collider. And the fact is there's a lot of anomalies that they're probably going to find. One of the things that is they're looking for are mini black holes about the size of a proton that could be created by slamming these subatomic particles into one another at that energy level. Another thing that they're looking for is the possibility that there might be some violation of the cardinal speed limit of the universe that sort of cropped up by accident when a beam of neutrinos was sent from CERN over to Italy, and it was detected as this particular beam of very small neutral particles appeared to be clocked faster than the speed of light.
Twice. Now, if that's true, then there's something fundamentally wrong with our understanding of the way the universe works. But there's been other evidence. There is a stream of matter or of material seen coming out of a star in Cygnus. I believe it's from Cygnus X3 that has been thought to be made of neutrons. And if it is made of neutrons, then they must be going faster than light because they're half-life is so short, you couldn't see them millions of or tens of thousands of light years away. It means that conceivably movement through time is possible, doesn't it?
Right. If we can confirm that neutrinos, and these are not neutrons, these are neutrinos which are much lighter, but they are neutral, and they do not interact with electromagnetic fields the same way that electrons and other particles do. So the fact that these extremely light particles are moving faster than light, if it's confirmed to be the case, then we are dealing with indicators that our entire structure of the standard model of quantum mechanics needs to be adjusted and rearranged.
Right.
This would challenge Einstein's special theory of relativity dating back to 1905. The cardinal rule of which is nothing can possibly move faster than the speed of light in our universe. Now, there are other ways to get around the light speed limit, but by sheer acceleration, they're referring to simply the fact that you cannot put energy into a system that is a piece of matter or a particle of matter and cause it to go faster than the speed of light. If indeed these particles are going faster than the speed of light, if it's not an artifact of the experiment and the design of the experiment or a mismeasurement, then we've got some rethinking to do, and it can very well possibly open up the likelihood that perhaps time travel is technologically feasible and accomplishable.
Meaning, if that's true, that time travelers almost have to already be here.
Right.
But there are reasons in physics that they may be here, but may not be able to tell us that they're here without violating a fundamental, without violating the so-called grandfather paradox. So they may be here. They may be, in fact, all around us. They may be on Mars, but they may not be able to actually come out and say that without doing something, violating something that could conceivably throw them somewhere else in time, or who knows what might happen to them.
Well, there's another way of interpreting quantum theory that would get around the grandfather paradox, and that is the many worlds theory of the physicist Hugh Everett III,
right,
who proposed in the 50s and 60s that any collapse of Schrodinger's wave function causes a bifurcation of the universe.
We've come to the bottom of the hour. We're going to bifurcate ourselves right now. And when we get back, we're going to be talking to Ralph about one of my favorite subjects, the suppression of knowledge. What happened to everything that Nikola Tesla knew? Ralph knows a lot about that kind of thing. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We're back. This is Whitley Strieber sitting in for George Nouri tonight. We're talking to Ralph Steiner. Then later, Graham Hancock's going to be with us. My new book, Solving the Communion Enigma, is going to be out on January the 5th. You can go to YouTube and look at a video about it by going to the Whitley Strieber channel. Simply search on Whitley Strieber channel and it'll take you right to it. It's the first thing nonfiction I've written about the visitors in many, many years, and I've made some breakthroughs of my own, and I think you're going to find them fascinating when the book comes out. We'll probably be talking about it on Coast. It'll be my guest with George in January as well. Here's a very interesting story, and I'm going to get into this a little bit, and then we're going to go back to Ralph. Last week, residents of a village in Britain, Carisley, were stunned to find apples falling from the sky. A short burst of apples fell onto a stretch of road, disrupted traffic, damaged several vehicles. Now, here's the thing that the meteorologist immediately said: they must have been lifted up by a wind vortex. And when I read that, I thought, well, wait a minute. When are apples hanging on trees? Why would apples be hanging on trees in Britain in January and in December, I mean? And the answer is the trees are bare this time of year there, just like they are here. So where did the apples come from? This kind of mysterious fall from the sky has been happening all over the world for hundreds of years. It's not reported much before the 16th century, but after that it begins to be reported. Most usually it's frogs, it can be fish, and you think, well, it must have been a distant thunderstorm, picked them up from the sea or from a lake, and then dropped them thousands of miles away, hundreds of miles away. But apples in the dead of winter gave me pause. I think that's really very, very unusual, and I don't think that there's a good explanation for it. I have to admit, if I had been there, I would have gotten a hold of one of those apples for testing to just see what its DNA looked like. Then I might have eaten one, but I might have waited until after I did that DNA testing to find out where it came from. Could it have come? Do you suppose? Could they have come from a parallel universe? Well, when we get back, Ann Strieber is going to ask Ralph Steiner that very question. She's going to ask him a question about parallel universes. We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber. We're back with Ralph Steiner, longtime journalist, one of the most knowledgeable people in the world, in my opinion, with regard to subjects like UFOs and the paranormal. Also, a real expert when it comes to physics. He knows the strange stuff, but he also knows what's real, and I find that really fascinating. Ralph, before we go on to the issue of the suppression of knowledge of people like Tesla, Ann Strieber's got a question for you about parallel universes.
Hi, Ralph.
Hi, Ann.
We met once many years ago.
We did at KPFA when I interviewed Whitley after Breakthrough came out.
Ah, was that it?
Yeah.
Well, here is my question. Now, scientists tell us, quantum physicists tell us that their parallel universes are definitely real, and they're right here among us. And I wonder if what makes a parallel universe might not be that it's operating at a different speed of light, now that we know that light speed is variable. I got this idea once when I was in an airport on a people mover, and I thought to myself, I'm walking on the people mover. people on the other side of me are riding on the people mover, and there are people on the ground walking. We're all going the same place, but we're going at different speeds. And I wonder if that isn't what's going on with parallel universes. I'd love your opinion.
Well, that's a very interesting question, because what you just described is relativity as it was invented by Galileo many, many years ago. And the idea that we could compare speeds and add and subtract them in the direction of motion became integrated into the laws of motion of Sir Isaac Newton. And where things really began to change is when they began to attempt to measure the speed of light from a source and from an observation frame of reference and determine whether or not you could add or subtract velocity from the speed of light. Can you cause a light beam to go faster than the speed of light in a vacuum? And what they found out in the 1800s is that you can't do that.
So far as we know.
With quantum physics, however, you have a violation of the linear correspondence between time and space. You have to reckon in a completely different way, in a much more digital way, where things tend to jump around. And that jumping around can also determine the dimensionality that is available to you. The only thing that the speed of light speed limit does in terms of giving us information is it tells us what we can perceive and what we cannot perceive.
So, Ralph, aliens could be not aliens from another planet, but aliens from another universe that's right here.
Right, exactly.
Wow.
That could be very much the case. And I'm beginning to come to the opinion that this veil between the dimensions or between the realms is basically simply a curtain of quantum noise, that it may entirely be possible to, through some technological means or through the means of consciousness, through intervening through meditation, perhaps meditation aided through technological devices, through very sophisticated electromagnetic fields and their quantum correlates, to quiet that quantum noise veil. And when you do that, things will start to pop out and enter our world that normally would be invisible to us.
Yeah, I've noticed that, actually, and I didn't notice any technology around me that was helping me, but I do a great deal of meditating, and I have to tell you, I've had experiences that would say that what you're saying is absolutely true.
And you say, Whitley, that when you meditate more, you have more visitor experiences.
Oh, absolutely. The more I meditate, the more it happens. It's absolutely true.
There's no way to remove the ghost from the machine, and the idea of the machine needs to be junked. We're dealing with an integrated whole, the universe of which we are a part. And panoramically, the connective tissue is probably something like consciousness, our own consciousness being on the spectrum of consciousness. And that, in turn, is part of the quantum field that engulfs us all and all things that have emanated from the original Big Bang state 14 billion years ago. You and I, Whitley, have had a conversation about the whole idea of quantum entanglement. What is
yes.
that, and how can it possibly be put to use? Basically, when the two objects or particles or quanta bifurcate from a common source,
or taken, in other words, if they're two things are taken, they are taken apart, like two photons or two pieces of diamond. Now it turns out
very large chunks.
Large chunks are supposed to they remain somehow connected in some mysterious way that nobody understands. But somebody may have understood that very well, and maybe that information has been hidden from us, which gets me to Nikola Tesla and the others that we're going to talk about. Fundamental scientific, it may be that this is already known. It's already understood.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about what may have been hidden of Tesla's work.
Well, Tesla was a brilliant genius standing on the cusp of two worlds. He was a 19th century scientist whose life spanned over into the mid-20th century. He spoke and wrote in the vernacular of 19th century physics, but he took us to the edge of quantum mechanics. He's the inventor of alternating current, of multi-phase electrical power, of rotating electromagnetic field technology. He gave us fluorescent lights, radio waves, dynamos, and he invented something called a magnifying transmitter, which uses the Earth's surface and the ionosphere as two plates of a giant capacitor. And from that, it would have been possible, if he had continued to receive funding from J. Pierpont Morgan, to have provided the world with an inexhaustible source of cheap and clean electrical power, drawn out of the power available swirling through the universe. He believed it was swirling through this ether that penetrates all matter. We now know that many of the effects that he observed probably can be understood from the standpoint of very sophisticated quantum theory. But nevertheless, he discovered the fact that the rhythm and harmonics are at the root of accomplishing many, many things. And he used that as leverage to accumulate enormous and generate enormous reservoirs of electrical power. He was able to build the lighting elements like light bulbs and fluorescent tubes, and to light them without being plugged in, the power being transmitted through radio waves.
And when he died, what happened to his research?
The FBI moved in and confiscated his entire opus. And it is now sitting at Los Alamos National Laboratory as highly classified, inaccessible to the general public.
Highly classified now? And he died when?
1943.
He died in 1943, and it's still highly classified. Ralph, why?
There is the distinct possibility that a lot that Tesla did was weaponized. Some of the basic physics principles that he unearthed were integrated into extremely sophisticated and powerful weapons technology that could be catastrophic if it got into the wrong hands, and advantageous to the power structure if it was held in secret as a trump card by those with extreme designs on global domination and very large largesse behind it, corporate interest.
Now, he's not the only one whose work has been hidden away like that, is he? You mentioned two others, Brown and Mueller.
Right. Thomas Townsend Brown, who I consider to be the second Tesla, who was born in 1905 and died in 1985, was another electrodynamics genius who pioneered anti-gravity research. Now, let's give Tesla credit. He also believed that he could access and modulate the gravitational field through electrodynamics. Brown discovered an effect in the early 1920s that he named the Byfield-Brown effect, or electrogravitics, that in essence was a testable phenomenon where there appears to be a slight discrepancy, a very slight discrepancy in the electrostatic potential of between the electron and the proton, so much so that it could be exploited for lifting an object counter to the force of gravity.
So what you're saying is UFOs could be us.
Right. It could be. There are universal physics principles, and Brown purportedly discovered one of them that can be fashioned into technology. And if we discovered it in our primitive state, then other civilizations far in advance of us could quite possibly have integrated this principle and many other principles into their propulsion systems.
And what if they saw this happening and thought to themselves, we don't want these guys to get out. They're not ready yet, and we're not ready for them. Then we go back to the Ben Rich quote.
Right.
It would take an act of God to pry it loose, because it ain't us, or only us, that's keeping it secret. Maybe somebody else has got the same idea that we better not be let out of here because we have atomic bombs and tend to use them.
And the fact that we're saving this technology for the military, that we're not letting it into the civilian world, just shows how dangerous we are.
Yeah.
Right, right.
It does.
Well,
I'm not
also
dangerous. Ralph, are you?
I'm not dangerous, but
listeners, we're not dangerous, but we're the ones who got stuck here. Hey, I don't like
you
that.
You are proposing free electricity to the world.
Yeah.
That is an affront to those who would like to slap a monopoly of control.
Well, you can certainly see why J. Pierpont Morgan didn't want that.
Right, right.
Yeah, because the whole infrastructure goes if something like that happens. But, Ralph, there are all kinds of alternative energy possibilities cropping up right now. 2012 is going to be, I would be almost willing to bet that one of those is going to become commercial in 2012. What do you think about that?
I would advise the listener to go to this website, PESN.org, PESN.org, PureEnergySystemNetwork.org, and you will see on a daily basis the rollout of exotic technologies, provocative technologies purporting to provide a clean, environmentally safe source of usable energy, that if any of these things come to fruition, and a significant number of them are being tested and scaled up and are ready for mass production now, any one of these technologies could blow the entire fossil fuel infrastructure out of the water, and our dependence on fossil fuels and nuclear fission could go out the window.
Wow. Maybe we'll end up doing an end run around the secrecy. Is all of this taking place in the United States or hopefully in other countries?
In other countries. You've got these devices being built and prototyped in Italy, in Greece, different parts of the world. You have inventors that are not constrained by the type of counterintelligence interference that inventors here in the United States have had to suffer through over the past 50 years or so.
Yeah, because I know some people who have who've done some really extraordinary work in terms of things like quantum communications, who actually moved to Switzerland, mm-hmm. moved their project to Switzerland because they did not want to, they were worried about having classification slapped on them in this country. And it was a very interesting guy. He said to me, you know, it's the worst thing that can happen to a scientific career, because then you can't publish anymore and you're stuck. You don't ever go anywhere beyond there. You're stuck behind the curtain.
Right.
Yeah, and they do not like that. They do not like that. Well, so, Ralph, let me ask you this. If you had, and I'm just asking for your best guess, the device that crashed at Roswell, which you probably know as much about or more about than anyone in the world. And by the way, folks, if you want to hear more of what he knows, there's a fascinating Dreamland from, I believe, September the 28th that's on unknowncountry.com in the Dreamland archive that will where he plays radio broadcasts and things from around the time of the Roswell incident. They're absolutely fascinating. What is your best guess about what that was? Was that from a parallel universe or another planet?
My guess is that it's from elsewhere. It was not of human origin. Other than that, I can't say. I do believe that there are people who know specifically where that craft came from and who the beings were that occupied it. But that's not us, because we're not being told.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, it's anomalous, and there is very robust evidence that the physical wreckage and possibly biological remains were recovered, and possibly one or more living beings were recovered from that crash that took place the first week of July of 47.
Oh, yeah. Well, my own uncle was involved in the analysis of the debris, so he told me, and I talked to General Arthur Exon, who was the commandant of Wright-Patterson for many years, and who said to me, frankly, that everyone from Truman on down knew this stuff was not of this world within 24 hours of their finding it.
Yeah.
And, you know, these guys weren't lying. They had no reason to. So we're just left. We're left. And I feel left behind. And I'm hoping that if we can get some really new energy sources going somewhere in the world, people begin to sell these things, let the marketplace do its job, because believe me, if people have a cheaper way of getting energy than buying it from the power company, they're going to do it. If they're allowed to, if it's not suppressed, they're going to do it. I'm going to do it, I know. And from there, from the principles that we see, the mysterious principles that weren't supposed to be true, that at that point, maybe a whole lot of new stuff will happen. It's an amazing world, and we're right on an edge. I'm very optimistic about 2012, folks. Ralph Steiner, I'd like to thank you for being with us. It was absolutely fascinating. When we come back, we're going into the deep past in a whole new way with Graham Hancock.